Tonight's shir is dedicated to the Vora Golda Bas Ephraim. Neshama should have an aliyah. Just a short introduction for tonight's class. The name of the class is the Parsha in my life. And that's the purpose of the class, is to make the Parsha applicable on a very personal way, that we can see its personal, its relationship to each and every one of us. And we can live the parsha. Like we saw last week, it's something that speaks to us very personally. The way to accomplish and make the parsha very applicable is to extract and to take the garments off the Torah. Because the Torah enclothes itself, comes in many garments. And the most external garments of the Torah is the physical garment, as the Torah relates to our physical reality and speaks in terms of physical people. And that's as the Torah vests itself in these physical garments. Now, the more physical we get, the more restricted and limited something is, because the physical world is restricted in time and space. So then when we learn a story, it's a story that happened a long time ago, and it happens with specific people. So it's limited to a specific time, a specific place. But when you extract and you take, the meaning from its most physical dimension, and you present it on a more spiritual level, then the limitations fade away, the restrictions fade away, and you're able to see how it speaks to you, and it speaks to your own neshama, and it speaks to your soul. Usually, the mystical aspects that are discussed are from Hasidic concepts and Kabbalistic concepts. Probably need a whole class on its own to exactly define the difference between Hasidic and Kabbalistic. Hasidus is saturated with Kabbalistic ideas. But there's a difference between them. Most of the weeks, the class is what dominates is the Hasidic outlook, the Hasidic perspective. In tonight's class, the Kabbalistic is highlighted. Meaning the class is jam-packed with Kabbalistic ideas. And the reason I'm saying this at the beginning is because these are concepts and ideas that are foreign to most people, unless people have seriously studied in a serious way Jewish mysticism and Kabbalah and Chassidus, and as a result of that, their people are unfamiliar with it, and so other weeks the ideas are presented one at a time. In this class tonight, it's going to be bang bang with a lot of Kabbalah and a lot of deeper ideas, and each sentence probably can have a full class on its own. I just don't want anybody to get overwhelmed with it, and if you don't understand and something goes over your head, it's okay, as long as you get to see the whole picture. And the reason we're doing this week is this is just too beautiful not to share. And the advantage and the of it is suddenly it opens up and it enables you to see the Torah from such a different place. It's so grand, it's so cosmic, as opposed to the story that we usually read, that is story with and getting into the details. This opens it up and makes it brings out the grandeur of the Torah. So that being said, let's talk about the parasha. There's a story this week in the parasha about Yitzchak and Rivka. There's the marriage of Yitzchak and Rivka. And the Torah spends many, many, many verses narrating the story. And the sages already, the Chachamim, take notice of this. And they see that the Torah goes into such extensive narration of the details of the story, far more than it usually speaks about any story of the Torah. Or any... They say the words of the expression in Chazal is "Yafa sichasan shel avdei avos yosin etedasan shel banim," that it is greater, the chatter of the servants of the fathers, greater than the Torah of the children. Which means that we have many gufei Torah, many laws, entire tractates in Shas, in Halacha, that are learned out from an extra vav from the Torah, hinting, giving a little clue that it wants, that it means something. And so when it comes, however, to... So the Torah generally is very concise and limited, doesn't speak at great length. But in this parasha, it seems that there's no limitations and no restrictions. The Torah goes in and tells a long story about the whole event, and then particularly repeats the story two times. What's the story? Just in brief. Avram has a son, Yitzchak, and it's time to get Yitzchak married, find him a wife. So he takes his servant Eliezer, his chief butler, Zakan Beisai, the elder of his house, and he sends him on a mission to go find a wife for Yitzchak. So Eliezer goes, and he goes, and he warns him not to take a wife from any of the daughters of Canaan, but he has to go to his own family, to Avram's family, back to Aram Naraim, where Avram comes from. So Eliezer is dispatched, he takes 10 camels, and he goes, and as he gets there, he doesn't know where to start. Who is the right one? So he offers a little prayer, and he makes a little siman, a little test. And he says that I'm going to ask the girl who's coming, and I'm going to ask her, I'm going to see the girls who are coming to the well, to the spring, to get water, to take home to their families. So I'm going to ask the girl, one of the girls that come, I'm going to ask them, to give me water, I'm thirsty, and the girl who's going to respond, and she's going to say to you, yes, I will give you a drink, and she will also give for the camels to drink. So that's a girl who's going to show great generosity and kindness, and that's the right girl that would be fitting to bring into Avram's house. He makes that test, and instantly his prayer was answered, because the first girl that he went approached was Rivka, and she responded graciously, and she did more even than she was asked, and he was excited, and he gave her the rings and a nose ring, and a bracelets. And later he comes to speak to her family, to Besuel and Lavan, who are the father and the mechutanim, the father, the mother, and the brother. And he tells them about the whole story, hoping that they will allow their daughter to come with him back to Yitzchak. But he goes and he repeats the entire story over again. Instead of the Torah just saying, "Vayasaper lahem es kol advarim eila," he repeated to them, he related to them everything that happened, it relates the whole story again. So, and the sages are telling us, because these are the servants of the fathers, this is so powerful and so great, that it's greater even than the Torah of the children. So what really is the meaning of all this? Yitzchak and Rivka getting together, a marriage of Yitzchak and Rivka is not just a marriage of two individuals. Great people, holy souls, the patriarchs, and the matriarchs, Yitzchak and Rivka. No. Yitzchak and Rivka's marriage is an embodiment, it's a personification of the marriage of heaven and earth, of spirit and matter, of God and the creation, or of God, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Shekhinah, which is the ultimate purpose of all of creation. The purpose of creation is to bring about this cosmic marriage. And this was realized, ultimately later this is going to be expressed by Matan Torah, because Matan Torah, we know, was the great wedding between Hashem and Knesset Yisrael, between Hashem and the world. However, we know that Maisa Av is similar banim, that the forefathers, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, what happened in their lives is a simen, is a sign that's going to happen to the children. Whatever happened to the children, whatever happened to the others, later manifested itself in the life of the children. But simen doesn't only mean it's a sign, simen means it's an asinas koyach, it's an empowerment. This is what empowers the life of the children. So every event that happens within the Jewish people had to first occur in the life of Avram, in the life of the patriarchs. So where did Matan Torah, the greatest event in Jewish history was Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, where did that take place in the life of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? That was in the marriage of Yitzchak and Rivka. That was Har Sinai. That was Matan Torah. Now, how is that? But in order to understand that, we need to just first introduce a few Kabbalistic ideas, and which is as follows. In Kabbalah it says that the marriage of Yitzchak and Rivka is a unification of union between two names of God. Shem Ma, the name of Ma, and Shem Ban, the name of, which is called Ban. What do we mean Ma and Ban? Ma is Mem Hei, which is 45. Ban is 52. Beis Nun, 52. These are manifestations of Hashem's name of Yud Kei Vav Kei. It's the numeric value of the Yud Kei Vav Kei. Yud Kei Vav Kei, generally we all know the gematria, the numeric value of the letters of the Yud Kei Vav Kei is 26. But that's only if we're looking at the letters as they are, just the simple letters of Yud Kei Vav Kei. However, there is a concept called miloi. Miloi means the filling of letters. So, for example, every letter in the Hebrew alphabet, in the Aleph Beis, is a word. So we have Aleph. Aleph, you can look at Aleph as one because it's an Aleph, or it's Aleph Lamed Pei. And Beis is Beis Yud Saf. It's a whole word. And Gimel, if you spell out the word, Gimel Yud Mem Lamed, Shin Yud Nun. That's called the miloi. The filling, the invisible letters that you don't see unless you're writing the whole word out. Or you're saying the word, then you can hear, you're saying the name of the letter, then you're expressing that part. It's called the miloi, the filling. Now, the Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei of Hashem, which is the primary name of God, also has a miloi. But the miloi of Yud Kei Vav Kei, filling Yud Kei Vav Kei, can be filled with different fillings. What does that mean? That you can have called miloya alfin, fill the yud kei vav kei with olives, filling the yud kei vav kei with haze, or filling the yud kei vav kei with a yud. And this is going to translate into a different gematria, a different numeric value, which represents a different level of Hashem's name. So, what do we mean with filling it with an olive? The yud always remains the same, the yud doesn't change. Yud is Yud Vav Dalet. That doesn't change. Okay, so that's always the difference. Will be the Vav, the two Hays, and the Vav. Because what's a Hay? What letter do you fill in a Hay? So there's three. This Kabbalistically, there's three ways of filling the Hay. You can fill the Hay with an Aleph, Hay Aleph. You can fill the Hay with a Hay Hay, or you can fill the Hay with a Hay Yud. Like it sounds like Hay sounds the most like Hay Yud. But for some reason, Kabbalah speaks that there is three ways of filling the letter He. Also, the Vav can change. Vav can sometimes be Vav Yud Vav, like sort of like counted like Viv, but that's one of the ways. Or it can be Vav Alevav, or it can be just Vav Vav. Okay. So when we fill it with olives, when we take the yud kei vav kei and we fill it with olives, that means the yud is always 20. Yud, vav, dalet. So yud is 10. Vav and the dalet is another 10. So it's 20. And then you have the two heys are filled with olives. So it's hey, aleph. It's 6 and 6 is 12. And then the vav, so 12 and 20 is 32. And then you have the vav plus 13. So you have 45. That's how you get the name Ma. Shem Ma is the name of 45, comes from filling the Yud Kei Vav Kei with Alephs. Then there's another milui to the Yud Kei Vav Kei, is we fill the Yud Kei Vav Kei with a Hey. When we fill it with a Hey, then Yud is 20, same. Hey, the two Heys both have a Hey inside it. So you have you have another 10 and 10, gives you 40. And the Vavs are without an Aleph, because there's no Aleph, it's just plain Vav. So it's 40 plus 12, it's 52. And that's called Shein Ban, the name of 52. Now the other ones we're not going to get into tonight, but it's just 45 and 52. Now these are just not just words, but they have meaning. When we say the name is different, it means that the divine energy, the divine projection that is projected in that name is different. So we mentioned last week that a name is a way you project outward to others. A person privately for himself doesn't need a name. So a name is the way you're projecting and making yourself known, making yourself accessible to others. So when we speak of Hashem's name, it means how Hashem is projecting into a certain dimension of existence or into a specific world. There are multi-worlds, various different levels of worlds. So depending of how the creative energy flows into that world or is projected into that world, that is connected to the various different names. So we have 45 and 52. The name of 45 is far higher than the name of 52. Even though 52 is a higher number, but the name 45 is a Shema, is a far superior, higher level of godly light, then it's far less constricted and limited than the name 52. Generally, to understand it, we know that there are four worlds, generally, which are, meaning besides our physical world, which is called Olam Asiya, the world of action, there is another world called, above this world, called Olam Ayetzira. The world of Yetzira is the world of formation, where you don't have any physical entities, but you have souls, angels, malachim inhabit that world, the world of Yetzira. Then you have a far more subtler world, a higher world, and that is called Olam Abriya, the world of creation. Generally, that's called Olam HaNeshamos, a world of souls. So we have Olam HaSiyah, the physical, Olam HaYetzirah, the world of formation, the world of angels, Olam HaBriyah, the world of Neshamos, or there are angels in that world too, but very, very high malachim. The malachim of Olam HaBriyah, very high malachim, like Michael, Gabriel, those are angels that inhabit the world of Briyah, which is a very high world. And above that is a world called Olam HaAtzilus. Olam Atzilus is the world of emanation. What does it mean, the world of emanation? So the idea of a world of emanation means that it's a world where Hashem is projected. There's no inhabitants in that world, and so to speak, as terms of entities and beings and creatures. It's a world of divine projection. The Eser Spheres are in that world. 10 attributes, which means that the divine attributes, Hashem channels His light to the world through various different vessels or through different attributes. For example, Hashem's attribute of chesed, Hashem's attribute of gevura, God's attribute of kindness and severity. On God Himself, we can't say kindness and severity because Hashem is higher than any identity, higher than any definition. So with Hashem Himself, it's plain simple. That's why this Olam Atzilus is, even though it's still a world where it's only God exists in that world, it's nothing else, but it's still called a world. Why is it called a world? If it's a world, means it's already restricted. The idea is as follows, that God is manifesting Himself already with a certain personality. He's assuming a personality. Because His very self is beyond personality. Higher than Olam Atzilus is what we call the Oir Ein Sof, the infinite light, the undefined light of Hashem. And there is God Himself even higher than light. But light means Hashem's projecting in the infinite beyond any description, beyond any definitions. Olam Atzilus is already contracting and presenting Himself, so to speak, with a certain personality, as the kind being, as generous and as a judge, Hashem as a benevolent king, Hashem as the judge, and so forth. These are the various different names representing the projections of Hashem of the world of. This is the world of Atzilus, which is called world because it already has definitions and it has parameters. But there's no creations in the world of Atzilus. Why? Because the only thing that exists over there, what is felt and sensed in that dimension of existence, is only Hashem. The projections are, for example, if there's kindness, it's God's kindness. It's not a creation called kindness. It's Hashem's kindness. And if there is Gevura there, it's Hashem being Gevura Dig. And so forth, all the other attributes. However, the world of Bria is where does creation really begin? That starts in the world of Bria. Because the world of Bria means creation. We have already substance. We have already beings that see themselves and experience themselves as something other than Hashem. As an entity, as a creation, as a somebody. True, the somebody of the world of Bria is a very subtle somebody. Meaning those creations are very strongly and powerfully aware of their source of God. And they're very, very minimally have self-awareness. But they do have some degree of self-awareness. They have a self. They have an identity. And that's why they're malachim, angels. They love Hashem, they fear God, but they're already relating to Hashem as something other than themselves. Then goes Yetzirah, where the creation thicken and become far more aware of self, less Hashem's light becomes, the creative energy gets dimmed, contracted, concealed, and the creations of Yetzirah are more constricted and therefore have far more self-awareness. Till we come down to our world of Asiya, which is the darkest realm, where Hashem's light is completely veiled and concealed, obscured, we don't see Him at all, and a person can go on living a moment, an hour, a day, a month, a year, or even a lifetime, oblivious that there is a creator that created him. That is the darkness of our world. So if we're to take all four worlds, and we want to characterize them more in general, we can have two characterizations. Olam Atzilus, which is a world, but it's a world which is godly, that's one dimension of existence. A God, there's already form, there's already some kind of tzir, there's some kind of description, but it's completely united with God. Atzilus comes from the word etzlo. Etzlo means close, together, united. It's almost like body and soul. Atzilus is like the body, just like the body serves as a conduit for the soul. The body is not something other. It becomes one identity with the neshama. So to Hashem, with the world of Atzilus, that's like His body. He merges. This is His hand. Like we know the attributes of Atzilus. Chesed is called Hashem's right hand. Gevura is called Hashem's left hand. It's only Him. In contrast to Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiya, where we're dealing already with creation, with things that are other, separated from Hashem. Now, these two dimensions of Atzilus, complete unification with God, and Bri Yetzir Asir, which represents separation, come into being from these two names of Hashem. The world of Bria, the world of Atzilus, that is united with Hashem, that's where Hashem is projecting through the Yudke Vavke of 45, Shema, filling it with Alephs. And in the world of Bri, Yetzirah, Asiya, over there the light is diminished, it's a different projection. Called Shein Ban, 52. Why? What is the relationship? Because if you take the word Ma and Ban, Ma, 45, is Gematria Adam. Man. Aleph, Dalet, Mem, is Mem, Hey. It's 45. Ban is Behema. Animal. 52 is Gematria Behema. Which means that just like the human being is far superior to the animal, so too the name Ma is far higher than the name Ba. What it really means is something like this: that when we're in the world of Atzilus, where Hashem projects through the name of Ma, that world is called a world that exists in human consciousness. The world of Bri, Yetzir, and Asiya are living in animal consciousness. What's the difference between human consciousness and animal consciousness? So let's look at the difference between a human being and an animal. A human being experiences and senses and is aware of things, or at least could be if he chooses to be, see things as they are with an objectiveness. To accurately feel and sense things as they really are. Animal consciousness, the animal perspective is jaded. The animal perspective is distorted, very narrow. Which means the animal lives in its own narrow world, it sees only what it... Meaning when the animal, for example, is in the field, it's walking, all it knows of is the grass and its own pleasure and its own... And if you can have there the most gorgeous painting in the world, a Monet painting on the floor, on the grass, the animal said that makes no difference. It will walk right on it with its muddy feet and just ruin the whole thing. Why? Because it doesn't exist. The only thing that exists is what's nageya, meaning what is applicable to it, grass, that's it. The human being has a sense of things as they really are, meaning even though there is something that is a good sandwich over there and there's a painting over here, I'm not going to step on it because I'm aware that there's other things. There's das. So the main difference between the animal and the human is that the human, yesh by das, has das, and the animal, ain by das, doesn't have das, meaning can't see things as they are. So that's the difference between when we say human consciousness and animal consciousness. Because the world of Atzilus is where the truth is experienced. The truth is that God is the only existence. Because he exists with absolute existence. He is. Nothing. There's no such thing as something else existing. If something exists, it's because Hashem is extending of his isium, of his is-beingness, and he's extending himself into something, and that's why it exists. So if something exists, it's perpetually being given its existence by Hashem. So in truth, the existence of anything is really an expression of God. That's the MS, that's the truth. And that's the consciousness of the world of Atzilus. So it's called human consciousness. Because it's aware of truth. It feels the MS. The worlds of Bri, Yetzir, and Asiya are living in distorted consciousness. It sees only a narrow sliver of things. And therefore, despite the fact that God is creating it or giving it or projecting every second, it gets a feeling that it has existence, it has metzias, it has a beingness. And that's why it's called Ban 52. Now, if we look at the word Ma and Ban also, Ma comes from the word what. Ma means what. Like Moshe Rabbeinu said, Va'anashnu Ma, and I am what. What does that mean? Lacking substance. Because in the world of Atzilus, all the attributes feel that they have no substance other than God. God is their substance. So they're totally united with Him. Moshe Rabbeinu was a soul coming from the world of Atzilus. And when he descended, all of our souls really come from Atzilus. That's why we're called Adam. Because our souls come from that consciousness. But our souls, when they come down over here, change. They get distorted as they come down. Moshe Rabbeinu's soul came down direct and was transmitted to earth, retaining its clarity that it had in Atzilus. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu was totally egoless. He was identityless. He had no existence. His entire life was an expression of the divine. Shechina medaberes mitoch groinei shel Moshe. The Eibishter, Hashem, the Shechina spoke through Moshe's mouth. It wasn't him speaking. Every movement of him. You knew that when Moshe was moving his right hand, it was a flow of God's kindness at that moment. When Moshe moved his left hand, this was projecting, Hashem was projecting through the left. There was no, it says that Moshe was even beyond loving Hashem. Because love means you have to be a somebody to love him. You have to have a sense of self. Moshe was tachlis habitl. Moshe emes, Moshe's truth. The truth as it is experienced in that world, in that dimension of existence, where you don't feel anything but Hashem. That's why the world of Atzilus is called Ma. It's totally one with Hashem and has no substance. However, the world of Bria is called Ban, because Ban comes from the world Binyan, building, Ben. And the construction of the worlds, as we know it, for creation to exist, and as a creation, that can only come from the name of Ban. Because the name of Ban, as we said earlier, allows for the world to start feeling itself as a world, as a creation. Because after all, the purpose of creation is not the Ma state of being. If Hashem would have wanted the Ma state, he would have stopped creation in Atzilus. Hashem didn't want the Ma state. Hashem wanted the Ban. Hashem wanted worlds. Hashem wanted worlds where there is choices, where there are trillions and millions of creatures and beings who have to struggle with their identity, have to struggle with their ego, who have a conflict. And they can make a choice to have Bechira Chashis. Because they have a sense of I. You have no sense of I, then you're a robot. Naturally, everything you do is godly. We needed a tzaddik Moshe to be that way. But the purpose of creation is not realized in Moshe. It's realized in the Jewish people. It's realized in all of us. When we struggle and we fight with our egos, whether we will surrender to God or we won't surrender to God. Whether we do His will, because this is what arose in Hashem's mind, that this would give Him pleasure. Well, there will be creations who will have a resistance, and they will have a strong, powerful sense of ego, and they're going to have to fight and recognize God in their life and submit to Him. So interesting enough, so this is that the difference between Ma and Ban is not only, this is a really fascinating point, the difference between Ma and Ban is not only in the creation, meaning in the world that is receiving the light, and is being a recipient of the light, whether it's experiencing itself in a ma state, in a total nullification state, or in a ban, in an animal consciousness. The difference is also in the transmitter, meaning the energy itself is different. Because when we say ma and ban, we're speaking about Hashem's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei, it's God's light, which means that this distortion of animal consciousness, it's a very hard thing to say, but this is the truth, doesn't begin in the creation, it begins in God. Which means, in order for us to live in that distorted mindset, that we can imagine ourselves as being somebody, as someone other than God, that's only because Hashem sort of plays along with that game. First, He imagines this idea. The whole idea that He conceived, the whole idea that God said, I'm going to create a world where there is ego, with our people who are going to choose to serve me or not, that means that He's leaving room for that possibility, for something other to exist but Him. So when the name of Ban begins within Hashem Himself. Ma, the name 45, of course, that's seeing truth as it really is. But even Ban, which is again that ability, that animal conscience begins, where is that? So it's in the desire that Hashem had, in the attribute called attribute of Malchus. Malchus is the last and final attribute in the world of Atzilus. There's 10 attributes, Chachma, Bina, all the way down to Malchus. Malchus is the last and final attribute. Malchus is where God makes contact with the creation. Malchus is the source of Bria, Yetzir, and Asir. So the world of Malchus, that's the attribute of the name Ban, the name 52. Why? Because what does Malchus mean? Hashem's desire to be a king. That's Malchus. Ano emlech, I want to be a melech, I want to be a king. So who are you going to be a king on? You can't be a king on yourself. You can't be a king on your own feet. And you're not a king. A king means that you have subjects that are not you who will serve you. So when Hashem is sort of assuming the role of king, He is creating already that distortion within Himself. Choosing to look at the world in that way, to accept that facade, that there can be other things but Him. And here's the thing, it really impacts on that level. On the level of Malchus, the creations really have an existence. Hashem sees them as someone other than Himself serving Him and so forth. That's, so when we say the Shema is in the world of Atzilus, and it's in the attributes higher than Malchus. Malchus, the last and final attribute, that's the name of 52. That's also called, give it other words, it's also called HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Shechina. This is a concept that we hear many times, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Shechina, but sometimes not clear on what are we talking about. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the masculine dimension of God's projection, and Shechina is the feminine dimension. What is the idea? Shechina means, from the word Vishachanti, Shochei, dwelling, Shochein B'tachtoinim, dwelling in the lower world. It's the God's light as Hashem becomes a very close source for creation, where Hashem lowers Himself into the creation. So, to lower Himself into the creation means you have to accept the created mindset, that there are creations. That's why the Shechina is the name, is called animal. Shechina is called behema. Of course, it's a source, the meaning of behema over here means that it create, there is a diminishment of das on that level. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu mean? Kadosh means removed, higher, withdrawn, above, separated. Kedusha means separate. That's referring to Hashem as He is higher than that distortion. as he sees things, the masculine dimension, the Adam dimension of Hashem. Right? When they saw the chariot, the Merkava, the chariot, Yecheskel, when he envisioned the chariot, it speaks about angelic beasts called animals. And then above it, there was a throne. And above the throne, he saw the image of man. What's the image of man? That's HaKadosh Baruch. That's the attributes of God that are in a state of Ma, a state of unity with Hashem. Ma is 45, is Adam. That's the Adam. And Anam and Behema, and the Shekhinah is called Behema, the source of the creation. Now, the purpose of creation. The purpose of creation is twofold. First thing is that it first plays itself out in the Ban dimension, which means the creations first have to acknowledge that God created them. That's stage number one. Meaning instead of feeling separated and rejecting and ignoring just living, you know, accepting the lie that they just come out of it. It's like there's sometimes we see in this world total disconnect from God, the creation should submit and do His will. But that's first stage. That's the, as we said earlier, stage number one is the enjoyment that Hashem has from creations who are created, separated from Him, and when they submit, then they serve Him. But when that avoid is over, when that service is over, the ultimate pleasure, and the ultimate is that the animal consciousness, meaning the world of Bri, Yetzir, Asiya, should be permeated with the light of Atzilus, with the awareness of Atzilus, which means that truth that is sensed in the world of truth, in the world of Atzilus, should be transmitted into Bri, Yetzir, and Asiya, all the way down into the world of Asiya, into physical existence, that we as physical entities in this world should be conduits of the divine. We should experience that truth. After the darkness, after the concealment, that's why we're going to laugh when Mashiach comes. The ultimate laugh, the Azimah, because it's going to be so amazing to feel that way and to see how, in truth, we were all always just expressors of the Eishtim. And that our whole look at things was so distorted because we're living. It's that Das that is going to be when Mashiach comes. Then the world of Bri, Yetzir, and Asiya are going to be living with the consciousness of Atzilus, which means the Behema dimension should be illuminated with the Adam awareness. This is hinted to in this pasuk. Umala ha'aretz deya es Hashem. The earth is going to be filled with deya es Hashem. What does it mean, the earth? Shamayim va'aretz, heaven and earth, mystically are connected. Shamayim is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the masculine aspect of Hashem's light, and aretz is the Shekhinah, is the feminine dimension. Like we see, husband, wife is mashpia mekabel, the giver, the recipient. A man, the giver. Shemayim is the transmitter, gives rain, and the aretz receives the rain. Also, interestingly, we said before that Ma, the name 45, is connecting to the world of Atzilus, where all the attributes are. What are the two main attributes that the Rabbi spoke about it last week, the two primary emotions within us? So too, in the higher world, the two main emotions are Eish, is chesed and gevura, kindness and severity. That's Eish and Mayim, fire and water. Fire is the left side, gevura, and Mayim is water. Shamayim is Eish and Mayim, Rashi said. That's why it's called Shamayim. So Shamayim is representing the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Oretz, earth, first of all, is Malchus, the Shekhinah is called earth. Why is she called earth? First of all, it's the lowest level. It's the lowest expression of God. Is the Shekhinah as it's transmitting into the world. That's why it's called Aretz. Another aspect to it, the earth is where everything grows, gives forth to all life. Same too, Malchus is where the light gets translated into creation to create all the billions of worlds and all the multitudes of creations and beings that were created from Malchus. She's the mother of creation, so to speak. That's Malchus, and that's why she's called Aretz, because everything comes from her. Umala Aretz Deyo Es Hashem. The purpose of creation is that Aretz, which is the dimension of Bri, Yetzir, and Asiya, the invention of creation, should get the awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The truth should come into Aretz. They should know Es Hashem, Mala Aretz. Which, see, here's the thing. This change, the change doesn't happen just in us creations. The change has to happen. There has to be a rewiring of the. I mean, there has to be a change in the godly And the godly life force that's in creation has to change and accept that truth. When the change happens in Malchus, when the Shekhinah opens up her eyes, so to speak, to see things from the perspective of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and see, that's when later it will translate into creation, that the creations will also see that. So that's the idea of Mala Aretz, when Malchus and the subsequent worlds that are all based on Malchus will become filled with Deya, will become get knowledge, Es Hashem, of Hashem. And what's the conclusion? Kemayim Liyam Mechasim. Like the waters cover the ocean, like the sea covers the world's going to be full, it's going to be like an ocean of knowledge, of divine knowledge. But here is something very specific. When it says Kemayim Liyam Mechasim, we know there are two habitats of life in this world. Two habitats. One habitat of life is earth, dry land. You have millions of creatures, right? Of all the beasts, mammals, and whatever, humans, we live above the earth. Then there is aquatic life, life in the ocean. Now the aquatic, there's also swarming with life. A very noticeable difference between the two is like as follows. The fish, the sea creatures, they live submerged in the sea. They don't have when you look at the sea, you don't see anything. You see a big body of water. You know that in the sea there's life, which means that the creations are swallowed up in their source. They live from the water, and they're completely contained within the water, and they don't have an identifiable metzias, an identifiable existence. The creatures of the earth are dependent on earth too, for their food, for their oxygen. It's all coming from earth, but they live outside of it, separated from it. So this represents dry land life and aquatic life represent these two dimensions of existence. And Atzilus is a world of the ocean. Whatever exists there is submerged and united with its source, with Hashem. Our world's Bri, Yetzir, and Asiya is called dry land because we feel ourselves separated from our life support, which is Hashem. And that's what the Pasuk is saying. When Mashiach will come, Umala Ha'aretz, that our world down here will be filled with Deya as Hashem. We will get knowledge, like human knowledge. And the animal will be educated to be like human. And then Kimayim Layam Machasa, we will all live in perpetual absorption and the continuous oneness with our source, with Hashem. We don't have any outside identity but Him. We will live in truth, as will be when Mashiach comes. How will this be accomplished? How will these two worlds come together? Between the world of man, the world of Bam, the Shekhin and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we accomplish that through Torah and Mitzvahs. When we learn Torah and when we do a mitzvah, we're bringing down, we're connecting these two dimensions. That's why, what do we do when we say, when before we do a mitzvah? L'shem yichud kutshe b'richu v'shechinteh. We want to cause a yichud, a unification between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Shekhinah. Transmitting HaKadosh Baruch Hu light into the Shekhinah. How is it done by a mitzvah? It's a whole discussion on its own, but just briefly. And whenever you're doing a mitzvah, you're taking a substance from creation. All mitzvahs involve physical substance, physical objects, whether it's a lulav, whether it's a matzah, whether it's a shofar, whether it's a mezuzah, a piece of parchment, whatever it is, it's physical substances, which are all created from the world of Ban, from the world of Malchus, the creations. The mitzvah itself is Hashem's will. So meaning that it's God's will, it's the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you do the mitzvah, you're bringing HaKadosh Baruch Hu light into that object. And by doing that, you're reconstructing and redeveloping all of creation. I mean, we're doing a little act down here, but it's causing a cosmic shift in the upper worlds. It's changing the mindset of the Shekhinah, bringing the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the Shekhinah, preparing the world for the truth that is going to be revealed when Mashiach comes. Every mitzvah is a marriage between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Shekhinah. However, as we said earlier, everything that happens in the world has to first happen in the life of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and their lives between. So this whole unification of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Shekhinah, the breakthrough, they were the trailblazers. They were the ones who did it first. And then later, we're the ones who fill in the details. But the general accomplishments they accomplished, they laid the foundation. Yitzchak and Rivka, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Shekhinah coming together. Why? Ma and Ban. Let's take a look for a moment at Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The Avos in general, we know each one of the Avos was a personification of different one of the attributes. Avram was a personification of Chesed, kindness. Yitzchak was Gevura. Yaakov was Teferis, Malchus. Okay. Not Mamachas, Teferis. So what does that mean? That Avram, simply we know that Avram, see everybody knows that Avram served Hashem different. He had a different style of service. Avram served Hashem by doing kindness. Yitzchak served Hashem by fearing God. Avoda, Karbana, his service. He trembled in awe before Hashem. Avram served Hashem with love. So looking at it that way, then they were ordinary people. And they served Hashem, each one in their unique method. But from a Kabbalistic perspective, it's not that much deeper than that. Avram was a conduit of the attribute of kindness. He was Hashem's kindness, the attribute of chesed of the world of Atzilus, just like Moshe Rabbeinu, we said earlier, was not a creation, an entity, a being. He was so bottled, so nullified to Hashem, that he was just a channel for godliness. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were also that way. That's why it says about Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Ha'avos hein hein ha-merkava. They are the divine chariot. Just like a chariot doesn't move only through the rider. It doesn't have any of its own movements. So too, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov didn't have any of their own. It's an interesting Sefer HaBoyer from Nechunya ben Akor, and there's a statement over there. It says that the attribute of chesed came to complain to God. The attribute of chesed said to God that since Avram was born, I'm out of business. Because every time there's a kindness that needs to be done, he's there. Which means that Avram was manifesting Hashem's kindness in the world. He was the channel of that kindness. It wasn't human kindness. It was godly kindness. It was kindness on a godly scale. Yitzchak, he represented gevura, but again, a gevura on a godly scale, the attribute of divine justice. That's what Yitzchak was, and Yaakov represented Teferis, which we're not going to get into now. Now, being that this comes out, if Yitzchak and Avram and Yitzchak are the divine attributes, then they are what? Then they are expressions of the world of Atzilus. And they come from the Ma dimension, from the world of 45. As we said earlier, Atzilus is dominated by 45. They were no identityless, complete bittul, complete novel, total unity with Hashem. That was Yitzchak. And the Imois, the matriarchs, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, they were expressions of the Shekhinah in this world. And therefore they came from the Ban reality, from the world of Malchus, from the world of where the creation already is given credence, the creation is given far more substance and a far more state. Now, where do you see that? It's all hinted in their names. Now, this is like this. Sarah, I'm not going to look at all of them, but let's look at Sarah. It's hinted to in her name. Sarah means she is a minister. Sarah. Malchus is Hashem being the minister over the world, ministering over the creation. He's the king over the creation. Malchus, she is the king. It's a feminine attribute, it's the attribute of kingship. Sar, meaning the ruler, the minister of. Rivka, what does Rivka mean? So Rivka comes from the word Rafka shel Bakar. The Gemara in Masechta Shabbos talks about when animals go out to plow. So when the animals go out to plow, they have a yoke. And when you want to hold together many animals together, you place this yoke, and it has like places for their necks, and you get together three or four animals, and they come three oxen. And that's how you can channel their thing to constructive work, the animals together. That's called a Rafka shel Bakar, a group of animals held together by this yoke that holds them together in place. Malchus is what holds the creations united and joined together. Let's understand a minute why. Shlomo HaMelech, in the Beis HaMikdash, in the first temple, had a very interesting structure outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, I guess I don't know if it was in the courtyard, I'm not sure exactly where it was. Those who are familiar better with Navi can maybe share this with me. But where exactly is? Well, there's this thing called Yam Shel Shlomo. What's the Yam Shel Shlomo? Yam Shel Shlomo was this big, it's called the Sea of Shlomo. This was this big basin, bowl, that was made, I think it was made out of gold, and it was filled with water. And beneath this bowl, there were 12 statues of 12 cattle. There were three on each side, three on this side, three on this side, three on this side, three on that side. Now we know that this looks like idolatry. It's like paganism. It's statues in the Beis HaMikdash. So we know that everything that was Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash resembling the higher the upper realms. The whole Beis HaMikdash was a reflection of the way things are in the upper worlds. The Yam represents the attribute of Malchus. Again, as before we said it's called Earth, now it's Sea, but not to get into it, but it is called Yam. And because it, through Malchus flows life into the world, and water is life. So Malchus is called the Yam. And when Malchus gives life into the world, the first recipients of the life, who are the first creatures that receive? So there is the Merkava, the divine chariot. The divine chariot has an axe on one side, and a lion on the other side, and an eagle. And so there were but even though there's only four, but more specifically, there are 12 animals on the four sides. This resembled the highest and first creations. These are very sublime angels who are the first recipient. Why are they called Bakar? Why are they called? Now they're angels. And they're very intelligent. Their intelligence is far more superior than human intelligence. Like we know, the Rambam writes that angels are far... But they're called animal. Why are they called animal? Because again, they're living already in the world of Bria. And since they're living in the world of Bria, they're living in a world of animal consciousness. Which means that even though they understand the class that we're giving today far better than we can ever understand it. But they are stuck as creations, they are stuck in to really feel, so you can understand these things intellectually, but to really feel that there's nothing but God, they're not able to strip and break free from their identity as beings. That's why they're called animals. The 12 animals, the first recipients are the 12 animals in the world of Bria. And they're the first recipients of Hashem's light. That's why Malchus, which is the bowl of water, the bowl of life, flows first into these 12 Yud Beis Bakar. Now if we take, what's the idea? So now, what's the idea of the yoke that's holding them together? When you have a king, and the king has many ministers, has a cabinet. So there is a minister of defense, and there is a minister of agriculture, and there's agriculture, and there's a minister of education, various different ministers that there are. Now, every minister has got their job. Now, obviously, in order to be fit for the job, you have to have a character and a personality that fits that particular job. So it's going to be, makes a lot of sense that the minister of defense has a completely different kind of personality than the minister of education. And therefore, if you put these two people together, they will fight all day. Because they can't get along with each one sees, has their own perspective of the way things need to go, where the money needs to be spent, and how things need to be done. How do you get cohesiveness between various different people, different ministers and so forth by the king, when the king walks in? Because when the king walks in, they realize that they have to go beyond their own agendas, they have to go beyond, and they have to figure out how to work together. Because they're buttled, they're nullified to a higher source. That's why, now applying this concept above, the creations that are created, if not for Malchus, if not for them sensing Hashem, then what would happen to the creations? They would become a very fragmented creation. Each one going off with their own. There would be conflict and distort and a complete chaos amongst the creations. What keeps the creations focused and united, particularly in the up down here, there is chaos. But up, because over here we don't feel the key. But up there in the higher worlds, what keeps all of creation together, what keeps the various different oxen, the different forces of the together, is the presence of the Shekhinah. They sense that they're getting their life from Hashem. That's why Malchus, the Shekhinah, is called Rivka, Rafka. That means she is the one that's holding together the different forces of creation. Again, they're recognizing God, and not recognizing God with total nullification. Because then they would be in the world of Atzilus. They're not in the world of Atzilus. They are creations. But they are creations that are submissive to their purpose. They recognize God as a creation, as their creator, and they yield and they bow down to Him. And that's why that's what's holding them together. That's Rivka. So Rivka, in her name, you see the concept of Shekhinah. She is the Shekhinah. Now, Yitzchak coming together with Rivka is the unification of, as we said before, Yitzchak is the attributes of Atzilus, Rivka is the attribute of Malchus, and now these two worlds need to come together. Now, hold on just 1 second. What's with Avram and Sarah? Why can't Avram and Sarah, the soul of Avram, which again is a soul of Ma, and the soul of Sarah, which is a soul of Ban, these two get together and you have a marriage? You have the marriage. Sarah is also Malchus, and Avram is Chesed. What would be wrong? Why isn't that the precursor for the giving of the Torah? Why isn't that the unification of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mishkan? And the explanation is given, and that is because Avram, it's because of something about Avram and something about Sarah. They both don't qualify. Now why don't they qualify for this unification? And that is because Avram is kindness. Avram is kindness. When kindness transmits, it transmits with abundance, with a lot of light. It doesn't limit, it doesn't condense, because it gives with all of its intensity. Since that's the case, the recipient, the Shechina, can't absorb it. It's too much revelation. So it's like a person sometimes you I hope it's not the case, but you feel, oh, this is going over my head. It's too much. It's just too much information. Too much. So what happens then when you get too much information is that the information remains hovering above. It's called makif. It encompasses from the outside, but you don't absorb, you don't take in. It influences you. Well, you know what it does? It creates, when you go to, let's say, something that is going over your head, and at least creates an interest. And you say, wow, that was interesting, and I'd like to know more about it. So it's giving you a little bit of a wake-up. It's pulling you and attracting, but from the outside, you're not absorbing. In order for the teacher to be able to transmit to the student should absorb, you have to condense, contract, and give over little bite-sized pieces, little ideas that can be absorbed and can be taken in. That's what Gevurah can do, but Chesed doesn't do. So therefore, when the life force comes from Avram to Sarah, which is Malchus, it's coming in expansivity, an expansive way. It's not being absorbed by the Shechinah. It's influencing, but it's not. It has to come first. There have to be Avram and Sarah before there can be Yitzchak and Rivka. But it's not yet called the Yichud. That's why the Pasuk says, S'moiloi tachas l'roishi, v'yeminoi tchapkeni. Hashem's left hand is under my head. His right hand embraces me. Right is Chesed. Chesed is too intense, meaning it's such light, such expansiveness, such revelation. Techapkeini, it embraces me from the outside. I can't take it in. It's too much. Smiley, when Hashem is exercising control, when He's transmitting from His left, which means He's mitzamtzim, He contracts, tachas l'roishi, that can enter my head. That I can absorb, that I can take in, that can come into me in an epinemius and internalize it. That's why from Avram to Sarah was too rich, too powerful. So it doesn't enter the Shekhinah into a pnimius, in an internalization. That's why it has to come from Yitzchak, because Yitzchak has the power of constriction, of limiting, of contracting. Same as also Sarah and Rivka. Why do you need four people to represent the Shekhinah? Sarah, Rivka, Rachel and Leah. Which one is it? Is it Sarah? Then why is it Rivka? Which one? The answer is in the Shekhinah itself, there is various dimensions. Because every one of the attributes really has a composite of all the other attributes. So in the Shekhinah itself, there is Sarah is the highest point of the Shekhinah. It's called Keser Malchus. It's the crown of the Shekhinah. It's hinted to in the world Sarah. Sarah means exalted, minister, above. That's the part of the Shekhinah that's still connected higher. It's not yet so involved with the world. It's the aspect of the Shekhinah as she's receiving the light from above. So Rivka has got her hands into the kishkas of the creation. Because what's Rivka? Rivka represents holding on, as we said earlier. It's the yoke that already has its handle on the angels, keeping them united. So that's already a lower level of the Shekhinah. Shekhinah as it is already closer to the world. That's why. When Avram transmits to Sarah, it's not impacting creation so much. Because it's hitting Malchus only in a very high place. Not being transmitted into the lower element of Malchus. In order for it to transmit into creation, to be able to influence creation, it has to come into the lower parts of Malchus, not the highest. That's why it's Rivka that receives that light. This is interestingly hinted to. In every marriage, there is the concept of Ish and Isha. Ish man, Isha woman. And that's where you have the marriage of Ish and Isha. What does the word Ish and Isha mean? We mentioned last week that Ish is Eish Yud, and Isha is Eish, also fire. Fire, Eish, Hey. Eish, Hey. What's the difference between Eish, Yud, and Eish, Hey? Eish, Hey, again, every unity comes through passion, comes through fire. So the Eish Hei is the desire of the Shekhinah, the desire of the creation, the desire of the Shekhinah to receive the light. She wants, that's why she's also called Kala. Kala means Kiloyan. She expires with yearning, with endless yearning to receive the light from HaKadosh Baruch. It's the feminine yearning to receive that light. That's why it's called Eish Hei. What's Hei? Hei, what's the difference between a Yud and a Hei? A Yud is a point. A Hei is expansion. The fire of the Shekhinah is to break out of her narrowness. She wants to break in, she wants to break out of the narrowness and go into the expansivity of truth as it is revealed in Atzilus. She wants light. She wants to get into the Hei, which is the expansion. The Ish is Yitzchak, is the power of the Mashpia, of the giver. To Eish, it's his fire to give a point, to give a little bit, to constrict, because if you're going to give too much, it's going to overwhelm. Eish Yud, it's the desire. It's when the giver, the Mashpia, the giver, wants the Makabel to receive it. And he has such a strong fire and desire that the Makabel, the recipient, should receive it. But the only way they can receive it is through contracting. And that is why Yud, a point, Eish Yud. But it's Eish, it's Yitzchak who has that ability. That's why also when Shemayim gives to Aretz, how is it giving? It's giving, it's called Givurais Kishamim, powers of rain. Why? Because when rain comes to the world, how does rain come? It doesn't come like a faucet that opens up, because then it would just be a marble. How does it come? Drops. Drop, tiny drops, because that's what the world can receive. That's what the Aretz can receive. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to the Shekhinah and he wants it to be absorbed, it can only come from Yitzchak and not from Avram. Avram is too. But Avram is needed as a warm-up. Okay. So now we get to the actual coming together of Yitzchak and Rivka. What happens? Rivka is the manifestation of the Shekhinah. However, we know that it says that by the sin of the Eitz Hadas, the sin of the tree of knowledge, and through because of the separation that it says that Rashi brings it, that Adam was separated from Chava for 130 years. As a result of that separation from Adam and Chava, and as a result of the sin of the Chet Eitz Hadas, that caused many, many souls to fall into the clutches of the forces of darkness, the forces of Klipa. For whatever reason, I'm not going to get into that. But there was a total spiritual breakdown where neshamas, souls, very, very supernal high souls, fell down into the forces of evil, and they have a hold. They have on certain neshamas, on souls, and that's where we find many, many neshamas of great tzaddikim and great people were stuck. What comes to mind the most is David the Melech HaMashiach. There was a soul that had to come through such crazy hishtalshalos, such crazy stories in order for that soul to come into this world, because they were all souls that were stuck in the clutches of the klipa, the clutches of the darkness. Same was also Rivka's neshama, Rivka's soul. She was a soul from the attribute of Malchus, but she was there stuck in Aram Narayim, and stuck in the world of Besuel and the world of Lava. In order for be able to make this yichud of Yitzchak and Rivka, the first thing needed is she needed to be extracted from where she was. She needed to be taken out from that place. In order to be taken out, Avram dispatched Eliezer to go find this amazing neshama, this representative of Shekhinah, and bring that soul up so you can marry Yitzchak. So that's why, who is Eliezer? Eliezer is the whole doer over here, the real one that makes this all happen. Eliezer mystically is connected to a very, very high malach called Malach Metatre. He's the angel called Malach Metatre, which is why Dafka this angel? Doesn't explain. But it's the angel Metatre that is attached, is sent on this mission to go find this neshama, extract it from the real, from a lowly, dark place, and bring this neshama up to be united with her husband, with Yitzchak. So now, Avram sends Eliezer, but here's the thing. First of all, why isn't Yitzchak sent? Yitzchak is 40 years old at that time. He could have taken care of his own shidduch. What did he need his father to go, Avram, to go send Eliezer? Why couldn't Yitzchak be the one who will go fetch the soul of Rivka? Why is it Avram that's the one who does it? And the answer goes back to something we said before. Before Yitzchak and Rivka come together, before there can be a transmission, a contracted transmission, which can enter into the Pnimius, the recipient, the Makabel, first has to receive an Or Makif, has to receive an encompassing light. Because in order to get that soul out of its darkness, the soul needs a wake-up call. It needs a shocker. It needs something to like give it a jolt. So it needs an intense revelation. That comes from Avram, that doesn't come from Yitzchak. Because Yitzchak, again, is Gevura. Gevura contracts and limits, transmits, adapts its transmission to the recipient's capabilities. In order to give an electric shock, in order to give a wake-up call, it comes from Avram. That's why Avram is the one who is dispatching Eliezer, and it's not Yitzchak who's sending on that mission. However, in order for Avram to wake up Rivka, he has to give Eliezer. Eliezer himself can't do it. Eliezer is a malach from the world of Bria. Eliezer has to have the light from the world of Atzilus. Eliezer has to have ma energy, ma light in his being. So what does Avram do with Eliezer? The first thing, he places an oath on him. He gives him, he says, Ashbiacha, I will swear upon you. What is the idea of Ashbiacha, I will swear? Swearing means also from the word Sheva. I'm going to transmit to you the seven energies from the seven attributes of the world of Atzilus into your soul. Eliezer needed to receive that energy in himself so that he can later transmit that to Rivka. By the way, this is an amazing thing that happens. And then once Rivka is touched with that light, and that will wake her up, and later she can come back. This happens every Friday night, by the way. Why Friday night does this happen every Friday night? Where do we have this? During the week, the Shechinah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu are separated. The Shechinah, the Shabbos, Friday night, the Shechinah rises. The whole world rises to be united with God. The Shechinah and the world's called Aliyas Olamos. The worlds go up. The Shechinah rises to come to be united with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What do we say as a preparation for that? The Shechinah doesn't have the strength, doesn't have the ability to be able to come up on her own. So she needs first the chasn, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has to send an agent to warm her up, to give her the excitement and the desire to unite with him. So we say, Lecha doidi likras kala pnei Shabbos nekala. The kala is the Shechinah. Lecha doidi, before even the Shechinah can unite with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, before the worlds can unite with God, there has to be Lecha doidi, is referring to God himself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You go likras kala, go to the kala. There's a certain hamshacha that comes Friday night, a beam of light that warms the world up, and then later that enables the world to rise up for the perfect unity. That was what happens every Friday night with the Chadoyi Likras Kala. That's Avram sending Eliezer to go excite and to warm Rivka to want to come and to bring about that unification of Avram, of Yitzchak and Rivka. And that every chasen and kala is that thing. The chasen first gives a ring, and the ring is makif. It surrounds, first as an or makif. And only later can there be a yichud pnimi. So first, there meaning an internal union. So first there has to be, however, a more encompassing transmission, an external transmission. So now, Avram is sending Eliezer to go find the soul of Rivka, where she is stuck. He makes a very important condition with him. He says, when you're going over there, don't take a girl from the world of from the Canaan. Don't you dare bring me a girl from Canaan. You must go to my hometown. You must go Artsi Vel Malagati. You must go to my home, to my family. Only there you can find. And he warns him, and he makes him takes an oath on this. Why is that so important? So here's a very amazing thought. We know that when we said earlier, when we do mitzvahs, we're taking substance of this world, we're taking sparks of the Shekhinah, and we're uniting it with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with God. However, we know that we're restricted. You can only do a mitzvah with certain elements in this world. There's kosher stuff that you can do a mitzvah with. Just like there is, for example, kosher food that we can eat, and non-kosher food that we can't eat. Kosher and non-kosher. So there is also, in mitzvahs, Chazal say that you can only do a mitzvah with an object that comes from a kosher substance. For example, a Sefer Torah is written on an animal hide. You can only use hide from a kosher animal. You can't use a fox's hide. You can't use a hide from a non. It has to be from a kosher animal. Why is that? And the answer is, Because in the world of Klipa, in the world of darkness, there is two types of darkness. There is darkness which has sparks of holiness, but sparks that could be elevated, sparks that could be taken out. Then there is certain darkness, certain Klipas that are so opaque, they're so thick, they're so intense, you can't extract. That's why certain substances in this world, Hashem says, don't touch. Quite on the contrary, you're going to try to elevate it. Instead of being elevated, you're going to become perverted. Don't go there. You're going to say there's a spark of holiness there? True. I'm going to take care of it. You don't mess with it. You can't go there. That's called the difference between two klipas. There is a klipa that is not so dark, and there's a klipa that's very, very dark. Noach had three children, Shem, Cham, and Yafes. The family of Shem, even though they were Gentiles, besides Avram, and became the Jewish people, there was a world of klipa there, a world of darkness, but the descendants of Shem never are a certain type of klipa that you can extract from. Cham is very, very dark, very, very, very heavy and concealing darkness, where you can't extract from, you can't elevate. So that is why he said, don't take, when you're going to find a neshama, you can only look for the girl to extract her, only if she's in the descendants of Shem, which is in my family. You cannot go down to Canaan because they're from Cham, and from there you can't extract a soul. Eliezer comes to the well, and he comes to get the shidduchim. He decides to make another test. If this soul is elevatable or if the soul is not elevatable, the question is like this: is the soul only trapped in klipa, but it's still holy, or is the soul itself become soiled and darkened by being in a dark place? How do you test? You have to test purity. You have to test holiness. What's the symbol of kedusha? What's the symbol of holiness? The symbol of kedusha. The symbol of kedusha is generosity, giving. Why? Because what is holiness? Holiness is an extension of God. God doesn't need anything. God is perfect. So from Hashem, there can only be a one-way influence. He can give, but he can't take. Mishamayim mihevi yava. In heaven they give, but they never take back, the Gemara says. Story, when they once gave a golden leg, he said, Hashem only gives, but he never takes back. The symbol of godliness is givingness, selflessness and giving. The symbol of klipa, the symbol of the forces of darkness, is they want to take and take everything for themselves. Ula aluka. Aluka was shtei banos. Remember where the pasuk comes from. It says Aluka had two daughters, and their names was Hav. And the translation of that is give, which means the forces of klipa, they're all about taking. They want to give. So the symbol of this soul is a pure soul or has become perverted is if she's going to have the act of trout, she's going to have the thing of kedusha, and she's going to give and not give. And that is why he tested, and he said, if she's going to give, then yeah. If she's not going to give, meaning if she's not going to, if she's going to, is not going to have the givingness to her, the symbol, then she's, it's a soul that can't be elevated. So now he comes down. And it's getting a little late, so we're not going to talk about why there was when Dafka to the well and the Be'er and why he made the simon over there. But when he comes over there and he tests the test, the final thing is like this. After she comes and she gives the drink to the camels and all of that, and there is a specific significance to the camels too. But as she comes and she gives the drink to the camels, what happens? He takes out the nose ring, and he takes out two bracelets. And Rashi says, now what are the two bracelets? Two bracelets are corresponding to the two luchas. Made Samidin, the two luchas. And they're weighing asarazov, they weigh 10, because these are the asaras adibas. The nose ring that he gives her was weight was a beka. There's a beka lagolgoiles, a beka which is a certain weight, a beka. What is the deeper meaning of that? Is as follows. After Eliezer extracted this soul, and he saw the neshama, and he saw her, and he was ready to pick her up, now is the time to begin the yichud, the time to bring that unity. As we said before, that's the unity of Torah and mitzvahs. bringing down from HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Shekhinah. It's time to give the Torah. It's time to cause that unification. So he takes out them. Here's the thing. In order to be able to translate energy from the infinite, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, into the Shekhinah, the only way that that will happen will come through a very intensification of the light. Which means like this. When you have a certain secret, when you have something that you heard, someone tells you, don't tell anybody about it. An exciting thing that's happening. You can control yourself. What happens if you get extremely excited? In order for something to be transmitted, it has to burst. Meaning there's such an intensification of excitement, you can't control it anymore. You can't control it anymore. You transmit it. You give it out. It can't stay anymore. That's the word beka. Beka comes from the word bekia, bekeia, bursting outward. Interesting that the Aseres HaDibros, the 10 Aseres HaDibros, have 172 letters. 172 letters. What is 172 letters? Because that's the word beka. 172 letters that the Aseres HaDibros has is represents the intensification of the light that it can't be constricted and it goes over into the recipient. And that's why at that moment he gave her the Becca, which is the light was so intense that it was transmitted from Yitzchak to Rivka, and here you have the ultimate harmony of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Shekhinah. Later Rivka comes with him, and the events that unfold exactly in she falling off the camel and all this, these are all the process of the soul being united with God, of the Shekhinah being elevated and united with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the world reaching its ultimate unification and oneness with Hashem. Oh,